All right, let's start. We'll start Proverbs, and then I will show you maps. You will like them. Proverbs 10:26. Now that I say that out loud, it kind of sounds familiar. Humor me. 10:26. Does it? Boo. Do you guys have notes on it? Does it look familiar to you? Does anyone have a way to tell?
Yeah,
it's new?
10:26.
It's Proverb. Do you have a Bible? What does it say? Yes. All right. Somebody read 10:26. Chaz will get there eventually.
Chaz has got it. Hold on. We're waiting for him.
I like that.
Nah, I don't. I might pray for us, but I don't know about reading.
Like vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so it's better to those who sent
it. All right. Like vinegar to the teeth. What does vinegar do to your teeth? Anybody know? Make some gritty. Like when you eat sour grapes, okay? Gritty. And smoke to the eyes. What happens when you get smoke in your eyes? Hurts, you cry, right? Stings, right? So what is so bad that it makes you grit your teeth and makes your eyes water? So is the lazy one to those who send him. This is a proverb about responsibility and what it feels like being in a position of authority when you say, hey, individual, I need you to do X, take care of, hey, it's okay. You don't have to be angry. Okay, we're just reading their Bible. It's all right. Okay. Take it easy.
I hate lazy people.
I hate vinegar. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I have a long, sour history of vinegar, speaking of. We won't get into that. I need to go to counseling. Yeah.
It's like saying, I have a great story, but I can't tell you.
It's a counseling story. It's my own personal pain. My mom, I'll tell you. You broke me. Okay, I'll tell. I can never be James Bond. I would cave in a second. My grandmother, for some reason, assumed that cleaning with vinegar was like a godsend. So my mom grew up under the mentality that you clean everything with vinegar, right? You run vinegar through the coffee maker, you clean the kitchen floor with vinegar, everything's vinegar. I don't know if you guys have smelled vinegar, but it smells like a skunk and a whatever, like collided and made a cleaning product. It's sick. Well, I got in trouble a lot, so I was cleaning a lot. So I had to wash the kitchen floor. And we didn't have mops for whatever reason in our house. You had to wash the kitchen floor on your hands and knees with hot, yeah. So that smell makes me nauseous. And then my dad loved vinegar. So any food that you could put, you know, like vinegar on, malted vinegar, he put it on everything. So anytime I smell it, I think of that and I think of washing the kitchen floor and it makes me want to vomit. So thank you. That was a lot cheaper than going to counseling center. So I feel better. Where were we? What were we talking about? What just happened? Yes. Okay. Like vinegar to the eyes. There we go. And smoke or vinegar to the teeth. Smoke to the eyes is the lazy man who like the lazy one to those who send him. So just I think for you guys to begin to think through in this season now, as you're in this position, you're in a position where if it's ministry related, you're probably an underling underneath somebody and will be an underling for the rest of your life in some way, shape, or form. Be responsible. Don't drop the ball. Be a man or a woman of your word. Be dependable when it counts, right? When you run organizations or you run a ministry or you run a whatever or you're a mid-level manager or whatever, you want people underneath you that when you say, listen, I need this done, that they don't need to get babysat. They don't need to be told 8 different times. You need to say, listen, that's it. Of all the qualities I look for as I think about hiring folks in our organization, that's probably in the top 3. If I can't tell you what to do one time and you can't do it, then you're not the right person for the job. If you need someone to manage your schedule for you and tell you when to eat lunch and when to go to the bathroom and when to get something done, that is not the type of person that I want to work with, okay? Teresa, in your job, do you find that to be true with people that you hire and that are around?
Yeah. It's
maddening. Yeah. Like, I'm paying you however much an hour to be here. Do your job, right?
So.
amazing. And in a generation, I think, that's kind of gotten away from maybe the work ethic that our forefathers had, that's with the entitlement that comes with it. Man, I just show up and punch a clock and I don't really need to do anything. It's unfortunate. Be a great employee. That's your job, right? Whether it's painting apartments, whether it's working in retail, whether it's starting your own business, whatever it is. Okay, we've talked about that concept before. But be responsible. And those type of people get elevated quickly because they're hard to find. And it may seem minuscule and simple, but when people in positions of authority watch people do their jobs well, regardless of what it is, they go, how do I elevate that person? How do I exalt them? How do I take them from here to here? How do I make them a shift manager, even though they're a minimum wage, you know, stalker of clothes? Not stalker. Okay? Bad illustration. So I had that job also. I hung clothes at a women's clothing store. Ask me about that later. More counseling. So, okay, I know. Not good with the word stalker at all. So, all right. So, think through that, okay? Christ also exalted that quality. He who's going to be responsible for a little will be responsible for much. If you can't be responsible with little, Christ says, you're not going to get much, okay? And it's part and parcel to the package, all right? So be responsible in whatever season God has you. Exalt that quality within yourself and see what happens, okay? Cool? No! Oh.
Right when you're about to start.
I was like 4 seconds.
I'm going to say some spiritual forces are at work right now.
Gosh. There, those spiritual forces. We like those better. All right. Whoa. Dude, relax. It's Friday. It's okay. Well, I better show you Midian before we lose it, okay? So, Mediterranean Sea up here, okay? Here's the Dead Sea, Canaan. This is Israel. You got Moab, Edom, and Midian, okay? This is Midian. This is where Moses is. This is where he's living, okay? This is obviously the Sinai Peninsula down here, okay? Eilat, which is a hotspot vacation town in Israel, okay, is right up here. So Moses is somewhere down here shepherding sheep, okay, in Arabia, okay? It is hot, it is dry, it is boring, okay? Ask Erica about it, okay? She came up to me yesterday and said, hey, I lived in the Mojave Desert. That's home for her, okay? So you guys have a great frame of reference for what that's like, all right? So again, he is way out of Dodge, right? Way down here hanging out, okay? And God's going to keep him there for 40 years. That's where he did his second 40 years of life, down in Midian, all right? And it's going to be the perfect training ground for the next 40 years of his life as he has to lead millions of people throughout the wilderness, all right? So, cool? That's Midian. I just want you guys to always have visuals and kind of know where we're at. So, see, wasn't that hard? Yeah. This is Egypt. Yep. So this journey, okay, so like we've seen that before, if you're heading from, so here's Goshen, right? This is the Nile Delta. This is obviously the most fertile area. This is where Israel lived in Egypt. The way that they would have traveled up and down this would have been through one of these established pathways. But that journey is what Abraham, Isaac, all the folks that went to Egypt from Israel, that was the way. That's a two-week journey, okay? So when we're talking about wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, A, they're not wandering. B, it's not a 40-year journey, okay? 2 weeks max. And God's going to bring them right here several times, okay, into the wilderness of Zin. We're going to go there. And they can see the promised land. Like, it's right there. It's not confusing. It's just keep walking north. And we'll get more into it, okay? But that's it. It's a short trek, as I guess in that day and age. 2 weeks was not undoable, okay? Make sense? So we'll see some Exodus routes as we get kind of through. There's three or four different possibilities as to where they were. There's down here in the Sinai Peninsula and even on the other side of Midian, there's 20 different potential locations for where Mount Sinai is. We don't know, okay? We know it's probably down south in the Sinai Peninsula or across the Gulf of Aqaba over here, over in Midian, okay? So they're not positive. Moses knows. We don't. So you can ask him to get there. Cool? Any other questions on that? Fabulous. All right. I'm going to turn this thing off because it's going to be staring at me in the eyes all day. And we're not friends as it is. So. Cool? All right. Back to Exodus. Let's get through some plagues today, shall we? I promised I would bring you charts. I upheld the proverb that I taught this morning. I was indeed responsible.
Yes.
Those aren't even, but that's okay. Nice catch. I'm tired. Okay. So, there is moi. It's chart. So, you can get at least an idea. I do want to show you kind of big picture stuff, as always, just so you guys can get a feel for how I break them down, because you are going to do this for Leviticus, okay? So, I know all of you have probably already charted the book of Leviticus, but in case you haven't, you're going to get to do it, all right? So, again, at the top, as you guys are, those are coming around. Did I divide them that poorly? Oh, yeah, those are my notes. Bring those back. My bad. Yeah. That's secret stuff. You can't see that. That's the holy of holies. He's not for you.
Yeah,
it's a good thing
you didn't get toasted.
Hmm?
It's called the Holy of Holies.
Oh, got it. I'm sorry, guys. It's not even noon. I'm not drunk yet. What are you talking about? It's only 6 in the morning. Brad and I were talking about that the other day. Peter's response in Acts, and they're like, these guys must be drunk. Peter's like, dude, it's not even 9 in the morning. He's not saying, no, I don't get drunk. He's like, no, it's not even 9 in the morning yet. Like, that's fascinating. So maybe after 9, he's, whatever. Yeah, toasted. All right, so Exodus, again, deliverance, redemption, whichever of the two you like, you may choose. You have choices, okay? Exodus breaks down into kind of 3 big picture sections, okay? 1 through 11 is about Israel's subjection. This is while they're in Egypt, underneath the oppression of Egypt, okay? And you can kind of see the subtitles under there, okay? We're going to hopefully get through chapter 11 today. That is our goal, all right? We shall see. The second half is basically God taking them into the wilderness for the first time, and they're going to learn some serious lessons, okay? That is God's mode of discipleship for Israel, okay? If you like these, there's a whole bunch, all right? Okay, good for you. And then the last part is going to be laws, God's revelation to Israel. Okay, 19 through 24 is the giving of the law. And then a whole bunch of Exodus is about, it's odd, but you realize, man, God really cares about detail. So when he says, this is the tabernacle, this is what color the curtains need to be, these are the guys that are allowed to carry it, nobody else can carry this article. Half of the book of Exodus is about the construction of the tabernacle. You're like, wow. So he is really concerned about this place of worship and what it's going to look like. So we won't read through necessarily all the details, but I want you to get a feel for how concerned God is about the high priest, what they wear, the order of service, what this place of worship looks like, and ultimately the tabernacle is going to be the thing that turns into the temple. Okay, so literally half the book about its blueprints and instructions and a bunch of legal jargon that you're like, holy cow. So it's crazy. All right. But we'll get into that. All right. And then I just kind of pulled up a couple key things that I thought were important. Okay. You kind of see Moses' leadership development plan. By the way, how do you say that? When it ends in an S and there's apostrophe S, is it Moses's? Like rhinoceroses, hippopotamuses? It's Moses' leadership development, right?
Yeah.
I'm reading a book right now. You guys read the Steve Jobs books? Walter Isaacson wrote autobiography. The guy that reads it continues to say, Steve Jobs is whatever. And I'm like, it's Jobs. It's just Jobs. Really?
I just looked it up not too long ago.
It drives me crazy because I'm like, man, this guy's reading a book for a living. He should know how to pronounce it right. But then again, I'm not an English major. Look that up. It's driving me crazy, Stephen. I want to know. Google it. Not now. Later. But I do want to know, okay? When it ends in an S, you have to add an apostrophe S. It's just like Moses or Jobs. It's not Jobs's or James's, right? I grew up without the extra S. You didn't pronounce it. You added the apostrophe, no S, and you don't say it. We shall see. I bet this guy knows what he's doing because he reads books for a living and probably has pronounced stuff. But there you go. I sidetrack again. So Moses leadership development, that's what we're going with for now. Okay. You see kind of the 40-40-40, how God developed him, and we'll watch kind of obviously the last third of his life begin to unfold. We're in it now. Okay. Some key concepts, I think this idea of Yahweh being revealed, okay, you can see the Hebrew for that. A couple things to note about Hebrew, not that you guys are Hebrew scholars, nor am I. Hebrew is read right to left, Okay, it's like Chinese and other Eastern languages. Okay, there are no vowels in Hebrew, none. So it's one of those languages that you have to know how to, like, there's like a, if you're not familiar with it and speak it, you can, the, all the words are basically kind of crammed together and you don't necessarily know where one ends and where another begins. And based on what letter is next to the letter next to it, depends on the pronunciation, how you say it, and it's crazy, okay? So I say that given our language, that's absolutely nuts as well, okay? So if you're looking at this word Yahweh, okay, start on the right, that first mark is a yod, and then a hey, and then a vav, and a hey. Those are the four letters that make up the word Yahweh. Yod, hey, vav, hey, okay? So now you know a little bit Hebrew, okay? Now you know as much Hebrew as I do. That was it, okay? They've added since, the Hebrew scholars have added like interpretive devices to help people that aren't as familiar anymore. They'll put like little marks underneath Hebrew letters or next to them dots and stuff, which are, they're basically pronunciation guides, okay, as to what vowels are supposed to be there that aren't, okay? So it's fascinating, so anyway. Okay, so that's kind of a big picture thing in that book. In the pink box there, you get kind of some details on the dates and purpose and those sorts of things, so those would be good for you guys to know. Bottom left, we're going to get the plagues today, so hopefully we'll walk through those. These are the 10 plagues. I put up here just kind of the Egyptian god that we're dealing with. As we walk through the plagues, you'll kind of see, again, as each one comes about, there is a direct rebuke to Egypt's gods that God is directly dealing with, okay? And then part of the latter half of Exodus is this whole idea of the feast and festival calendar. God is going to implement for them basically mandatory breaks to stop and to worship and to focus, to downshift, to not work, to hang out with family, to worship God, to drink some vino and eat food and enjoy life together. Okay, so the ones in blue there are what they would call like, they're the kind of the three biggest feasts. They all revolve around the agriculture calendar. And these three that are in blue, Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles, are the ones that they would travel back to Jerusalem later on, kind of throughout history. Okay, so they were, the males at least, were required to go home and travel back to Jerusalem and celebrate together. Okay, so make sense? So there's Exodus, okay? So let's jump back in. You guys have got that. You get at least an idea of how I break down my charts, and yours can look even fancier and more better-ish. All right, so we finished in 4:17, yeah? Yes, all right? So now we're about to see God send Moses to Pharaoh. All right, and we're going to jam this morning. We won't read everything word for word, but we will get there, all right? So God has prepared Moses. He's getting ready to go. We got Aaron that's going to go with him. Okay, Moses is at this point out of excuses, and God is going to call him to go. Okay, so before we jump in there, somebody pray for us with that 20-minute long introduction, and we will jump into Exodus. Who wants to pray? Thank you, Jordan.
Dear Lord, I just thank you, Father, for another day, another morning where we can just gather and study your word. Just pray for this time, God, that we would just be focused on you and that your wisdom, we would take to heart, God, and we would apply everything we're learning to our lives throughout the day, God. And, just thank you once again. I want to honor and worship you during this time.
Amen. All right. So 4:18, let's kind of watch God begin to prepare him. So I like this about Moses. Again, you're going to see his humility. God's called him to go, but notice what he does in verse 18. Read that.
Moses went back to Jethro, his father-in-law, and said to him, "Please let me go back to my brothers in Egypt to see whether they are still alive."
What do you notice in that? Yeah, it's his brothers.
No, but the intention is like, if they're fully alive, then you have to, he went to the bush. So yeah, why is there no reason he went to go?
Not at all where I was going with that, Jeremy. Pause. Somebody else, what do you notice about Moses' humility with his father-in-law, Jethro? He's asking permission, right? He's going to his father-in-law. May I go? Well, God's already told him to go. So I like that about him to say, man, I've worked for you for 40 years, right? I'm kind of an important piece of the cog out here. You know, I clean up a lot of poo, and whatever, right? But he asks, and I appreciate that. You're going to see that Jethro was basically a father figure to Moses, okay? He's got nobody, right? He's got his father back in Israel that he doesn't know. He's got a Pharaoh that was his grandfather and, you know, adopted kid. Those guys are long gone. Jethro is going to serve as a father figure to him. He is going to give him some key advice in the book of Numbers, and you're going to see him consult him numerous times on this journey, because though he may not be a believer, and I think we'll see with Jethro, it's debatable. I think he's been influenced by Moses' life, or will be at some point. He knows Midian, right? He knows desert. He's a guy that you want his advice. And Moses is wise enough to go, this guy knows what he's doing, as well as his brother-in-law. We'll see that as well, okay? So he asked permission to go, okay? Jethro gives him permission to leave. He says, man, great. The Lord said to Moses and Midian, go back to Egypt, for all the men who are seeking your life are dead. So it's good. Moses took his wife and his sons, mounted them on a donkey, and returned to the land of Egypt. Moses also took the staff of God in his hand. Okay, so his wife and his two sons go with them. At some point, they're going to return home. His wife and two kids will, and it'll be Moses and Aaron, and they're going to get the bulk of the story. Okay, and notice what he takes with him in 20. Why is that significant? Yeah, what does that symbolize? Yeah, it's like, okay, Lord, this isn't about me. Okay, the power of God that you've displayed already for me, that's going to be the key to unlocking, obviously, what he's about to do. Okay, so I think, again, some humility and some trust in God. All right, 21, keep going.
And the Lord said to Moses, when you go back to Egypt, see that you do before Pharaoh all the miracles that I have put in your power. But I will harden his heart, so that he will not let the people go.
So God knows exactly how this is going to take place. You're going to do these things. These are not going to work. All these plagues, all these miracles that I'm going to show you, they're not going to do anything. That's basically what he's saying, okay? I have hardened his heart. He's not going to let the people go until we get to plague 10, and then it'll be, then they can go, all right? So God tells him that on the front side, okay? 23, he says, man, we're going to get all the way to this place where you're going to tell him, I'm going to kill your son, your firstborn. That will be the end of the plague. So the 10th plague in verse 23, it's going to end with the killing of all the firstborn sons, Pharaoh's included, and Israel's included as well, if they are not obedient to do what God's going to ask them to do to protect themselves from that last plague. All right? Now, 24 through 26 is kind of probably one of the strangest, like, how does this fit into what we're reading? All right, so Moses has been called to go. God says leave. He's got permission from Jethro. And then in 24 through 26, read that.
At a lodging place on the way, the Lord met him and sought him to put him to death.
Of course he did. Like, why wouldn't God want to kill Moses? You're like, what? Keep going.
Then Zipporah took a flint and cut off her son's foreskin and touched Moses' feet with it and said, surely you are a bridegroom of blood to me. So he let him alone. It was then that she said, a bridegroom of blood because of the circumcision.
So Moses is leaving to go do what God's called him to do. God basically says, I'm coming to meet you to kill you. What's the issue as to why God is so hot angry with Moses? What did he fail to do that Zipporah has to now step up and do? Circumcise his kid. Like, well, that's odd, right? So Zipporah, a Midianite who's not a Jew, says, I see why God's mad, circumcises their kid on the spot, throws the foreskin at Moses' feet, kind of like in disgust, and God says, okay, what's the lesson in that for Moses? Why would God be so concerned about that?
It's the outward sign of his covenant with his people.
Okay, so what does it say when he doesn't do that? Potentially, okay? If Moses hasn't identified himself as a follower of Yahweh, that would probably tick Yahweh off, right? A bit, right? Publicly, okay?
I think he'd be a leader.
Are you exempt as a leader from the rules that everyone else has to follow?
No.
God says, you better circumcise your kids. Just because you're Moses doesn't mean that you get a get-out-of-jail-free card here, buddy. So there's a great learning lesson on that for us, okay? Just because we may be above the rules, we're not above the rules. Okay, we need to follow part and parcel, even the rules that we put in place. And these happen to be God's, but we're not exempt as leaders from doing what we call other people to do. And if we're not willing to do them, how dare us ask other people to do them, right? So
God says, I relent, all right? So again, an odd three verses in the mix of this story, but you're like, okay, so God was serious, all right? 27, the Lord said to Aaron, go meet Moses. They meet together, they have this conversation, and now they are going to meet with the people for the first time. So they're going to reveal to Israel what God has told them, okay? 29, Moses and Aaron went and assembled all the elders of the sons of Israel. Aaron spoke all the words which the Lord had spoken in verse 30 to Moses. He then performed the signs in the sight of the people. So he's probably now reproducing, hey, here's a staff, here's a snake, here's a staff. Hey, Moses, put your hand in your bosom again. Hey, bring it out, it's leprous. Okay, put it back in. Oh, it's not. Okay, so they're seeing what God is doing. Okay, the result is verse 31 with the people. Read that.
The people believed, and when they heard that the Lord had visited the people of Israel and that he had seen their affliction, they bowed their heads and worshiped.
All right, so now it's been over 400 years since God has shown direct intervention and concern for Israel. They see the signs, they go, okay, this is legit. They believe, okay, and they bow down and worship, okay? Not Moses, but I think what God's going to do. Now, this is the most fickle of generations you have ever seen. Okay, they are characterized in Hebrews as the unbelieving, hard-hearted generation. They are very influenced by, you know, whatever the current circumstances are. If things are good, they love God. If things are bad, not so much. Okay, and we're going to see that journey all through Moses' life. Moses? Life. I don't know which one it is. All right, so chapter 5, now we're going to go see Moses meet Pharaoh for the first time. Okay, pick up in 5, verse 1.
Moses and Aaron went and said to Pharaoh, thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, let my people go that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness.
All right, so what do they exalt? What do they say to, what's the purpose of them leaving?
Feast of the wilderness.
Okay, which is what?
Worship.
It's worship, okay? They're leaving to go worship, all right? Pharaoh says exactly what Moses thought. Who is this Lord that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? Okay, that was Moses' objection. What in the world are you talking about? Okay, now I'm like, can't even say that word without, I don't know, I'm so confused. I do not know the Lord, and besides, I will not let Israel go. Okay, then they say in verse 3, the God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please let us go a 3 days journey into the wilderness. We may sacrifice to the Lord God. Otherwise, he will fall upon us with pestilence or with the sword. So, you want to know who he is? He's really big, okay? And if you don't say yes, bad things are coming. So he wants what he wants, and he's going to get it. Okay? Verse 4, keep going.
But the king of Egypt said to them, Moses and Aaron, why do you take the people away from the work? Get back to your burden.
So how does Pharaoh interpret this?
Why are you bothering
me? Why are you bugging me? And what's going to happen to him? What's Pharaoh concerned about? If he lets all the people go, what does he lose? A free work crew. 1 million of them, okay? Not good. So he says, dude, no, I'm not going to let them go. In fact, because of your mouth, verse 7, you are no longer to give the people straw to make brick as previously. Let them go and gather straws for themselves. I can't even believe, Moses, you would have the audacity to ask. I'm going to make their lives now more difficult. Before, I gave them straw, they made bricks, no more straw. They can get their own straw, and yet they're quota of bricks will not change, okay? That's the idea. In verse 8, Pharaoh makes an interesting statement. Read 8.
But the number of bricks that they made in the past, you shall impose on them. You shall by no means reduce it, for they are idle. Therefore they cry, let us go and offer sacrifice to our God.
What does that mean, they are idle? Anyone else got a different translation?
Lazy.
They're lazy. Moses, the reason that you want to go is because you're lazy. You don't want to work. Your people are lazy, and they don't want to work, and that's why you want them to go. That's how Pharaoh sees it, okay? Interesting observation on how folks, I think, outside of Christianity often view God. God is a crutch for the weak, right? Especially if you come from a athletic, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, I get it done by myself mentality. That is often one of the criticisms that you hear. God is a crutch. You are weak. I am not weak. I don't need God. No, thank you. God is for weak sauce, sissy boys, okay? And that is Pharaoh's understanding. Look, you guys are just lazy, and you don't want to worship, okay? So I think, obviously, that is a bit of a misunderstanding, all right? So the work is heavier. They ramp up the work. Okay, 11 or 10 and following is basically them going back to the people saying, hey, guess what? You can thank Moses for this. No more straw. Your labor requirements are not going to change. You're going to keep your quota exactly what it is, and you got to get your own straw. Verse 15, the foreman of the sons of Israel came and cried out to Pharaoh, saying, why do you deal with your servants this way? There is no straw, yet you still say, make bricks. And behold, your servants are being beaten, but it is the fault of your own people. Like, what do you want us to do? You're beating us for not making bricks, but you won't give us straw. And now what are we supposed to do? So how do you suppose the people feel about Moses right now? You are our hero, like a chapter ago. We bow down and worship the fact that God revealed this to you. You go to Pharaoh. Pharaoh says, no, you're not leaving. Go make bricks. In fact, go make them without straw. And now your people are going to get whipped, right? Now all the people, in the blink of an eye, are going to turn on Moses, okay? So that's the idea. And Moses is going to feel that. These people are, they just vacillate between extremes of what they want, what's going well, and everything is based on their external circumstances in terms of how they feel about God, okay, and how they feel about Moses, all right? So, they're pretty ticked at him. Verse 20, they left Pharaoh's presence. They met Moses and Aaron, and they were waiting for them. 21, the Lord said to them, may the Lord look upon you and judge you, for you have made us odious in Pharaoh's sight. This is the leader's insight to Moses and Aaron as to what their words to Pharaoh have done to them. You have made us odious in their sight, to put a sword in their hand to kill us. Like, it wasn't bad enough that we were slaves. Now they hate us and it's getting worse. Okay. 22, this is one of the patterns you're going to see with Moses. When the people gripe at him, he doesn't gripe back at them. Okay. 22, read that.
Then Moses turned to the Lord and said, O Lord, why have you done evil to this people? Why did you ever send me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people, and you have not delivered your people at all.
That's a pretty honest response. Like, Lord, what the heck? I've done what you've asked me to do. You said go, I went. I didn't want to go, but I went. Okay, I said exactly what you wanted me to say, and the end result is now, Pharaoh says no, he's angry, and the people are ticked at me, and everything has gotten worse, not better. Why did you even send me? That's a pretty gut-level honest response. Agreed? He doesn't bark at the people, though. You guys remember the movie Saving Private Ryan? And Tom Hanks' character talks about which way griping goes. You gripe up, not down. I think he used a different word than gripe. That we can't repeat in here, but that's the idea. And I appreciate that about Moses. You don't see him until the very end of his life, and he will, bark back at the people. It's not the people's fault. He takes an issue that they bring to him, and he goes to God. Now, the interesting thing is, all the things that they gripe to Moses about, none of them are his fault. It's to God. So he goes to God and says, Lord, I've done what you've asked me to do, right? It's not the people's fault. They're angry at me, but they should be angry it's something else. So Moses realizes that the target is on his back all the time. They need somebody physical to get angry at, something they can see and touch. Moses is that. And Moses has the sense about him to go, you know what? You're not angry at me. You're angry at the circumstances. You're angry at the fact that God is doing what God's doing. Your anger really is directed at God, but you can't see God. So I get the finger pointed at me. Okay, so he's, in a sense, very mature in the way he handles these things. And you're going to see that pattern to the point where you're like, Moses, just kill them all, or just, you know, backhand slap somebody, right? To where our patience would have been worn thin a long time ago. Moses is very, very patient. Okay, and he too will pop, but it takes a, he's got a long wick. Okay, so that's the first encounter. Okay. Moses is going to go to Pharaoh twice before the plagues start. First one doesn't go so well, okay? You can imagine the second one's not either because we have plagues that follow. So chapter 6, let's pick up there, 6 verse 1.
But the Lord said to Moses, now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh, for with a strong hand he will send them out, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his hand.
Okay, so he reminds them, I will do this, okay? I'm going to lead them out. He reiterates now the covenant he made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and says, I will do this thing, okay? And because of my love for them and my remembrance of them, I'm going to do this, okay? In verse 6 through 8, God's going to give kind of an interesting speech to Moses, okay? Start in verse 5 and read through verse 8.
Moreover, I have heard the groaning of the people of Israel, whom the Egyptians hold as slaves, and I have remembered my covenant. Say therefore to the people of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from slavery to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great acts of judgment. I will take you to be my people, and I will be your God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God, who has brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will bring you into the land that I swore to give Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you for a possession. I am the Lord.
What do you notice? 6 through 8, there is a word that is repeated like 10 times. What is it? I will. I will do this thing. I am the Lord. I will bring you out. I think it was very emphatic to Moses to say, this is about me. I'm going to do these things to demonstrate my love and my power. Okay? We talk about often the idea as believers, you know, post-resurrection and the miracles that we see, like, gosh, if we could just see God act. This is one of those few seasons where God says, I am going to put me on display. You are going to see me in all of my power. And yet these people's hearts still remain hard. And we think, gosh, if we just had miracles, if we could just see physically God's hand move, our hearts would change. Well, the reality is, second to the resurrection of Christ and maybe the parting of the Red Sea, there are no greater miracles in history. Maybe with Elijah and Elisha, and they raise people from the dead, which is pretty cool. These are big. And the people's hearts are like, yeah, no, I'm not impressed. Okay, so lest we think that we're somehow slighted because we didn't get to see all this cool stuff, the hearts of the people do not change. But God's glory is at stake. Okay, just note to self, we don't necessarily need to turn there now. Did I want to mention that now? Yes, Exodus, where was it? 12. Turn real quick. Forward, just as a preview. Exodus 12:12. Just so you can see kind of God's commentary on the plagues that are coming. This is one is specific to the last, but I think encompasses all. Somebody 12 to turn there. 12:12, and then someone else turn to Numbers 33:4. Read 12:12 if you will.
That night, and I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and all the gods of Egypt. I will execute judgments. I am the Lord.
Against all the gods of Egypt, I will execute judgment. Okay, Numbers 33:4.
And your border shall turn south of the ascendant of Akron, and cross to Zin. And its youth shall be south of Kadesh.
My bad. Are you in 33?
Oh, no, I'm not. Don't worry about me. 33:4, not 34:4. My bad.
Like, man, that I did not read that verse this morning.
Well, the Egyptians were burying all their firstborn, whom the Lord had struck down among them. On their gods also the Lord executed judgment.
Okay, so you see God's commentary on that? I am executing judgment on Egypt's gods. Okay, so all that we're about to see unfold is it's a demonstration of God's power over all other gods. All right, so that's the idea. God promises to do these things. Okay, so back to chapter 6. Let's pick up there and watch now God prepare him to go. All right, verse 9, chapter 6. Moses spoke thus to the sons of Israel. They did not listen to Moses on their account because of their despondency and the cruel bondage. All right. God says, now go tell Pharaoh again, you're going to let Israel go. Moses again complains about the fact that I am unskilled in speech. Like, listen, God, I tried this once. It didn't work. I went back to my people. They don't even like me, and they're on my team. They don't listen to me. How in the world do you expect Pharaoh to listen to me when my own people hate me right now? So he continues to give these excuses, right? 14 and following basically is a quick promise from God of the people that he's going to bring out. He walks through the sons in order, starts with Reuben, Simeon in verse 15, 16, he goes to Levi, and then he unpacks Levi's family. Okay, this is where Moses and Aaron were from the tribe of Levi. Okay, three sons are mentioned from the tribe of Levi. Verse 17 is Gershon, 18 is Kohath, 19 is Merari. Okay, they will be mentioned later. Okay, so just Make note of those guys. Gershon, Kohath, Merari. They are going to be very prominent in the tabernacle workings later on. Okay? Notice verse 23. Read that.
Er took as his wife Elisheba, the daughter of Aminadab, and the sister of Nishan, and she bore him Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar.
Okay, so Aaron, who's Aaron going to be ultimately? What is his role? He's the first high priest of the nation Israel, and he's married. Interesting. Can priests get married? Yes, they can. Where the Catholic Church came up with the fact that they can't, I have no idea, okay? God permits it. We're going to see it later. Now, they have to marry within their tribe. They have to stay within Levi, okay? But that is an unbiblical, I don't know where they got it, okay? They didn't get it from the Bible, all right? So, Aaron has four kids, okay? Nadab and Abihu, okay? So these guys are fascinating. We'll learn about them in Numbers 10, okay? They're interesting. And then Eleazar and Ithamar, okay? Ronan, our guide, his kid's name is Ithamar from this deal, okay? There's a fascinating tradition when you were born, okay? They have it, they call it a Torah portion. When you are born, on whatever day you're born, there's a associated piece of Torah, the scriptures, the first five books of the Old Testament that are associated with whatever day, okay? His were from Numbers chapter 16 when his son was born, okay? Leviticus 16, different book. And these were the names mentioned. And one of the ways that you would name your child is you pick whatever names that are mentioned during that chapter of scripture and you pick from there, okay? The day his kid was born, Leviticus 16, which we'll learn about, is a very important chapter in Leviticus. These four guys are mentioned, so he named his kid Ithamar after Aaron's sons. Okay, so you get to meet him later. Okay, Aaron's son Eleazar, verse 25, has a kid. His name is Phinehas. Okay, you guys may have heard of him. He is bad. Okay, we will read about Phinehas. He puts Mel Gibson in Braveheart to shame. Okay, this guy is awesome. Okay, so we'll read about him. That is a man's story. So, ladies, you'll enjoy it, but it's for the dudes, okay? So, he rolls through all that, all right? So, just wanted to mention a couple names to you because they will be important later, all right? Chapter 7, the Lord comes back to Pharaoh, or to Moses and says, you're going to go to Pharaoh, you and your brother, okay? Verse 3, I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart. I'm going to multiply my signs and wonders, okay? They're going to see some pretty cool stuff. Verse 7, just we get a chronological anchor here. Moses was 80. And Aaron, 83, when they go to speak to Pharaoh. Okay, so now they are going to take trip number two to go see Pharaoh. All right, so let's pick up in 7 verse 8, and let's watch now this second interaction that Moses and Aaron have with Pharaoh.
Then the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, when Pharaoh says to you, prove yourselves by working a miracle, then you shall say to Aaron, take your staff and cast it down before Pharaoh that it may become a serpent.
All right, so that we saw that before. We didn't see it in his first interaction, but we saw God preview that that's going to happen. So here we go. Keep going.
So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did just as the Lord commanded. Aaron cast down his staff before Pharaoh and his servants, and it became a serpent. Then Pharaoh summoned the wise men and the sorcerers, and they, the magicians of Egypt, also did the same by their secret arts.
All right, so we're going to see this as a theme in what the magicians and the conjurers or whatever that Pharaoh has are going to do, okay? The first two plagues that are coming with blood in the Nile and frogs, they are able to reproduce. I have no idea how, okay? So they're into whatever secret, mystic, bizarro religion that they can do and are somehow able to reproduce on some level what God is doing, okay? Then they hit a point where they're like, oh boy, we can't do that. Like, that God is bigger than us, okay? So this first one is kind of a preview. Moses, or God, turns Moses' staff into a snake, and they go, great, we can do that too. Look at our staff turn into a snake. So they're not impressed with what Aaron and Moses have done, okay? 12, they each threw down their staff and they turned into serpents, but Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. There's a really cool scene in The Prince of Egypt if you haven't seen it. Like, if you've seen that scene, they throw down the staff and everybody's like, whoa, like, big deal, right? It's kind of very anticlimactic and they're like, oh gosh, right? And as they're having this bickering battle. In the background, you see the two staves, like, on the shadow of the wall, and Aaron's staff, Moses' staff, eats the other one. But it's kind of like, you got to pay attention to it. It's cool. So, anyway. So God, even with that, is showing that he's in control. 13 now, we continue to see the theme of what's going on with Pharaoh. Read 7:13.
Still, Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he would not listen to them as the Lord had spoken.
All right, so God is going to, again, in compassion and love and grace, harden Pharaoh's heart so that he can see the mighty hand of God. All right, so here comes plague number one. All right, so God is still working. Pharaoh is still unresponsive, and now we're going to start the first of 10 plagues. All right, so let's pick up in verse 14.
By this you shall know that I am the Lord. Behold, with this staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water that is in the Nile, and it shall turn into blood.
Okay, so that's the first plague we're going to see. The Nile is going to get turned into blood. Now, obviously, the reason that Israel is, or Egypt rather, is so fertile is because of the Nile. This is a big deal, okay? They're in the desert otherwise without the Nile. So imagine someone comes to Fresno and says, I am turning your entire water supply into blood. It's completely useless. We don't last very long, right? I mean, there's no agriculture, there's no drinking water, there's no nothing. That's a pretty big, like, God starts at a pretty high level, right? That's a really big deal, all right? No drinking water and no way to survive ultimately, okay? So the fish that are in the Nile, 18, are going to die. The Nile will become foul. The Egyptians will find difficulty in drinking water from the Nile. They're going to find a way around it, which is part of the reason they don't, they kind of harden themselves, okay? But this is what God's going to do, all right? So God basically shows up. He does this. Verse 20, he lifted up the staff, stuck it in the water. Nile turns to blood. Verse 21, the fish were foul. And there was blood, verse 21, throughout the land of Egypt. Okay, here's what the magicians do. 22. Now, this is odd to me. So we've got a land that's full of blood and a Nile that's completely useless because it's turned into blood. What would you want your magicians and sorcerers to do? How about undo it, right? Like, great, you can make more blood. That's not helpful, right? But that's their, God does all this and they take a bowl or whatever and make, look, we made it bloody, right? Like, okay, I don't know how you did that. It's still not what God did, but what ultimately would be great if you're going to display your power is to undo what God just did, okay? For whatever reason, they don't because they can't. Pharaoh's heart is hard because he thinks, we're still on the same level, okay? And verse 23 says he has no concern even for this. And the way that they got around this in verse 24 was they dug around the Nile for water, meaning they would dig in the dirt areas, the water would filter through the dirt and they could get clean drinking water. It was a pain, but that's how they found water. Okay, so they had a kind of built-in filtration system, if you will, and were able to drink apparently whatever water was filtered through that. Okay, so plague one, the Nile, okay, turned to blood. Now we're going to get frogs. Okay, pick up in 8 verse 1. All right, so you're getting frogs, which are, you know, frogs are nice, but a whole lot of them, not so much, okay? Verse 3, they're going to come out of the Nile. They're going to be, listen to this, in your house, in your bedroom, on your bed, like everywhere, okay? When we were in Denton in college, there was a couple summers where there was like this crazy weird cricket infestation. They were everywhere for about a month and a half. And like anywhere you would walk, there were dead crickets everywhere. So they smell, they were irritating, they're on your feet. You walk into a place of business and people are tracking in debt. It was the weirdest thing. They were everywhere, right? And they were slightly annoying. Not like I can't do life because of them, but it was just, you're like, something's odd. This is like whatever animal that eats crickets, they've all died apparently because they're not eating them anymore. So exactly. So you got a bunch of frogs now. They're in the land. Okay. They're in your kneading bowls. So they're in your kitchen. I mean, they're it's annoying. Okay. So that's what God's going to do. Verse 6, they stretch out their hand. They bring in all these frogs. Verse 7, the Egyptians, the magicians, did the same with their secret arts, making frogs come up on the land of Egypt. So we're already inundated with frogs, and now you guys are making more frogs. Thank you. Very helpful, right? So again, why they do that and not the opposite, obviously because they can't. It's just an odd deal, okay? So Pharaoh calls to Moses and says, hey, here's what we're going to do. You entreat the Lord for me that he may remove the frogs from my people, and I will let your people go, that they may sacrifice to the Lord. Okay, so Pharaoh's heart is soft, right? And he says, Moses, just remove the frogs, okay, and then I will let your people go. What is Pharaoh asking for, in a sense? Is he really repentant? No.
He's asking for what he wants first before he...
Comfort. Comfort. Is he concerned about his sin? Or is he concerned about the consequences of his sin? Very different. I don't like the consequences. Take my consequences away. That's what I don't like. And as soon as those are gone, because he doesn't really isn't concerned about his sin, he doesn't soften. Okay? Great counseling nugget. Okay? There's a big difference when you deal with people that are grieved over their sin or are grieved over the consequences that their sin brought upon them. Very different, okay? And we handle those very differently. As a church, as a life group leader, wherever you're in, when people get upset because these things got taken away from me, or I can no longer do these things, or now my life's in shambles because of this, that's very different than, man, I've grieved the heart of God. What I did was wrong, and I am sorry because I've hurt God, and I've hurt others because of my actions, because of my words, because of my decisions. And the way you handle those two situations are very different. Now, consequences are good, and they're there to get us to realize the gravity of our sin and for you to go, wake up, this is not good, and God often in his goodness will allow us to experience consequences to get our heart back to the right place because we couldn't get there without him, okay? But Pharaoh is a typical example of a hard-hearted person who doesn't want to deal with consequences, but he's not real concerned about his sin. He wants to keep doing whatever he's been doing, okay? So just a good counseling nugget for the future and a great filter to run your spiritual life through. When you sin, are you more concerned about what could happen or what God could take away, or are you more concerned about the fact that, Lord, I've grieved you and I need to repent because I've hurt you and I've damaged a relationship, right? And we need to get that back on track, okay? So something I ask myself frequently in the midst of my own debacles, okay? So there you go, all right? So Pharaoh says, hey, Aaron, Moses, tell God to remove them. And Moses says, great, done. You tell me when, okay? Verse 9, I love the way that Moses even deals with Pharaoh. Listen to how he speaks to him in verse 9. What do you notice about how Moses speaks to Pharaoh? The honor is yours to tell me. When shall I entreat for you and your servants and your people that the frogs be removed? Is he a jerk to Pharaoh? No, he's respectful. Pharaoh, the honor is yours. You tell me when you would like me to remove the frogs, and I'll tell God. When do you want them gone? He says, tomorrow. He says, great. It's a good reminder for us. We communicate a really hard message. The gospel, in a lot of way, it is the hardest message to hear. You're a failure. You cannot do it on your own. You've grieved the heart of God. There's nothing you can do. In fact, your actions are like filthy rags before him. That's not a very positive message, right? Now, we can either make that better, or not better. We can make it worse by being arrogant jerks about the way we handle the gospel, right, and speak in a way that's not honoring, or we can be gracious and loving to people. I appreciate that Moses, having to give a very difficult message, doesn't let his presentation of it get in the way of the message, right? He handles himself well in front of Pharaoh and continues to demonstrate respect. He doesn't yell at him. He isn't a jerk. He handles himself well and honors him. You're the guy. You tell me when, okay? Now, he knows at the end of the day, look, God's working through me. He's not working through you, but he submits himself in a way to Pharaoh and says, man, I want to honor you, okay? You look impressive in front of your people. You tell me when you want this stuff to go away. Verse 10, he says, tomorrow? He says, done. It'll be tomorrow. Pharaoh goes away. Moses and Aaron return. The Lord, in verse 13, did according to the mouth of Moses, and the frogs died out of the houses, the courts, and the fields that next day. 14 and 15, read this.
And they gathered them together in the heaps, and the land stank.
Can you imagine just like shoveling heaps of frogs and piles and what dead, rotting frog carcasses smelled like? And like, nasty, right? But verse 15, here you go.
But when Pharaoh saw that there was a respite, he hardened his heart and would not listen to them as the Lord had said.
So when his consequences are removed, what happens to his heart? I don't care, okay? Again, it's a great indicator. If you remove somebody's consequences, are they still grieved? If your consequences are removed, are you still grieved? A right heart says yes, because I've grieved God and I've grieved others, okay? So Pharaoh's a great example of a bad example, okay? So, Nile to blood, frogs in the land, now we're going to get gnats, okay? So gnats, 16, are coming, all right? The gnats. Say to Aaron, stretch out your hand, verse 16, like the dust that is in the earth, that it may become gnats throughout the land. Okay, that's a pretty significant description. As much dust as there is, we're turning that essentially into gnats. They are going to be everywhere. Okay, not painful, but ridiculously annoying, right? Just, right? You ever watch the, like, shows on the savannah and, you know, you got all the cows out there and there's just flies everywhere, and you're like, oh gosh, get off me, right? Just ridiculously annoying, okay? Verse 17, they did so. Aaron stretched out his staff. End of verse 17, all the dust of the earth became gnats throughout the land of Egypt. The magicians tried with their secret arts to bring forth gnats. Again, thank you so much, but they could not. So the gnats were on man and beast, okay? So they've hit now a point where they go, we can't reproduce this. We're two for two. Now the third one comes, and we cannot reproduce this. Notice their response, verse 19.
Then the magicians said to Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. But Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he would not listen to them as the Lord had said.
So Pharaoh's best of the best, they say, this is God, not our God. This is a different God. We can't do this. And Pharaoh says, forget it. You guys are useless to me. He did not listen to them as the Lord had said. Okay, so we went from gnats. Now we're going to get bigger gnats. We're going to get flies in verse 20. Okay, so fourth plague. God says to Moses, rise early. Okay, as Pharaoh comes out of the water, say to him, thus says the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me. Okay, Pharaoh's coming out of what water would you guess? The Nile. Now, we've seen earlier that people go to the Nile to bathe. Okay, that is a possibility. The other thing that could be going on is that this could be a religious ceremony. Okay, the Nile was an important deal. The Nile was worship. There were gods of the Nile. So he could literally like be in the midst of church while Moses walks in and says, you need to repent. My God is bigger than yours. You're going to get fly. So he's probably interrupting, more than likely, a religious ceremony that Pharaoh is taking part in to bring more punishment into his land. Okay, so he does this. Okay, verse 21. If you're not going to let my people go, you're going to get flies, basically, is what he says. But on that day, I will set apart the land of Goshen. This is interesting. This is the first plague where Goshen, and who's in Goshen? Israel is not affected. Okay, God's going to draw a distinction between this plague being put on Egypt, but he's not going to put it on Israel. It seems like it, yeah. They went away and die. So some of these are temporary, right? We're going to start getting in some where like they're going to send in locusts. Well, the locusts are going to do damage that is irreparable. The locusts go away, but what's in their wake doesn't, okay? So we've still got a stinky land with foul whatever. They have to be burned and taken care of. They go away. But the consequences of those are there. So first ones, minor consequences. Hey, you can't drink water for a while. Okay, we can drink water again. Hey, you've got frogs in your kitchen and in your bed. Like, that's got to be creepy, right? But they go away. Well, we're about to see these things get ramped up. Okay, and they're going to get pretty severe here quickly. Okay, flies are kind of the last, I don't know if minor is the right word, they're still major, but they don't have long-term painful impact on the people. They're about to, okay?
Mike, this presenting himself to Pharaoh so many times, I just, for some reason, what I can remember, that's not an easy thing to do, is it?
No.
To Pharaoh in the first place, that takes time.
Yeah, so there was definitely a respect there that he would allow him to do that. But yeah, he's going to basically 10 times, plus the two before where he comes and says, hey, this is coming. So yeah, that had to be a pretty significant deal, right, to get access to get to Pharaoh, okay? So we get flies now, so now we have bigger gnats, okay? He's going to set apart the land of Goshen, okay? Verse 24, he did so. There came swarms of insects in the house of Pharaoh, the houses of the servants, and the land was laid waste because of the swarms of insects in all the land of Egypt, okay? 25, Pharaoh's now going to offer a compromise to Moses. He's going to offer four compromises throughout these plagues to Moses. This is the first of four. Read that.
And Pharaoh called to Moses and Aaron and said, go sacrifice to your God within the land.
So he says, hey, great, go sacrifice to God. You've got a green light. But you have to do it where? Within the land. What did God tell him to do? 3 days' journey. You get out of Dodge and you go worship me out of Egypt, okay? So, Pharaoh says, hey, I'm not so much liking this, so how about, Moses, how about this? I'll give you freedom to worship, but you have to stay within the land, okay? Moses responds, verse 26.
But Moses said, it would not be right to do so, for the offerings we shall sacrifice to the Lord our God are an abomination to the Egyptians. If we sacrifice offerings abominable to the Egyptians before their eyes, will they not stone us?
So, interesting play here. Moses says, hey, that would be disrespectful to you guys. When we worship, when we slay animals and the things that we're going to do, that would be offensive to you guys. A, we don't want to offend you. B, if we offend you, they're all going to stone us. Okay, so I like the way he presents it, right? He's like, no, we're concerned about you, right? We don't want to offend you. We also don't want to get stoned. So, this isn't going to work, all right? So, no. So Pharaoh says, or 27, he says, we must go a 3 days' journey into the wilderness to worship our God. That is what he said, verse 27. Pharaoh said, I will let you go. Okay, here's compromise number two, that you may go sacrifice to the Lord your God in the wilderness, only you shall not go very far. Okay, you need to be within eyesight of me. You can go outside of Egypt, but you can go like right over there. Okay, I need to see you. No 3 days' journey. Moses says, uh-uh. End of verse 29, do not let Pharaoh deal deceitfully again and not letting the people go to sacrifice to the Lord. I'm not going to compromise. God said a 3 days' journey, a little over there is not acceptable. So Moses basically says, no, we're not going to do this. I'm not giving into your compromise. I'm doing what God told me to do. How tempted right now, by the way, is Moses to say, great. How do the people feel about him right now? They don't like him. They got more work, more bricks, less straw. Pharaoh offers a solution. Great, go worship God. Done. Let's go. Moses stands his ground and says, uh-uh. We're not doing it until every jot and tittle of what God said is done. And until then, we're not going to compromise. So he's in a tough spot because Israel is not a big fan of Moses right now because they're not getting the results they want. And their work and their labor has not decreased. Okay, so. You get the impression that they're not. It's odd, right? Because Moses and Aaron both, they don't seem to be part of the workforce. And I don't know why. So that would make it even worse, right?
Isn't it because of where they're coming from?
Yeah, but they're still Israelites. And yeah, so for whatever reason, Aaron wasn't, though. Aaron's in town. He comes back and, you know, he takes his brother with him. But Aaron didn't go to Egypt. Moses did. So for whatever reason, there's some type of hierarchy where they're not part of the workforce, which had to be maddening for the people as well. Like, thanks, you just put all this on us.
Do we know if this Pharaoh knows that Moses is the guy whose dad wanted to kill 40 years ago?
You get the impression from what God says to Moses, all the people that wanted you dead are dead or gone, that he may have known about it, but he doesn't care because he's not, there's no ill will. He doesn't like what he's bringing him now, but his life's not. Kind of, yeah, right. So there's definitely some relationship somewhere. I don't know where this Pharaoh's relationship, like where he fits in the family tree. My Egyptian history is not that sharp, so there you go, okay? So, interesting nonetheless, okay? Verse 20, Pharaoh hardened his heart this time also, and he did not let the people go. Again, this interesting back and forth between God hardened Pharaoh's heart, 32, Pharaoh hardened his own heart, doesn't let the people go, okay? So now verse 9, or chapter 9 rather, we're going to get it ramped up. Now we're going to start getting death, okay? The fifth plague, we're going to get the livestock killed, all right? 9 verse 1, God says, go to Pharaoh, tell him that they're going to serve me. If you refuse, here's what's coming, verse 3.
Behold, the land of the Lord will fall with a very severe plague upon your livestock that are in the field, the horses, the donkeys, the camels, the herds, and the flocks. But the Lord will make a distinction between the livestock of Israel and the livestock of Egypt, so that nothing of all that belongs to the people of Israel shall die.
All right, so if you leave any of your flocks out in the fields, if you don't bring them in, they're all dead. They're all going to die, okay? Some of the Egyptians apparently brought their things back in, okay? So they're seeing the handwriting on the wall. They realize, wow, when Moses says, bring gnats, gnats come. When Moses says, turn the water into blood, blood comes. So they're seeing this. They're obviously going to leave with a great amount of livestock, and it's not just their own, but some of Egypt's as well. So they're seeing this. So some of them are obedient, apparently, and bring their stuff in. And then God makes a distinction, again, between Israel's livestock and Egypt's livestock, which had to be insulting, right? When you wake up the next morning and everything in the field is dead, in the field adjacent to yours, that's Israel's field in Goshen, they're all alive and weren't brought in. You're like, it's just, again, it's a backhanded slap from God saying, listen, I'm in control. I can do what I want to. And none of your gods can intervene. Okay? So, that's the idea. So, verse 6, we'll read that.
And the next day the Lord did this thing. All of the livestock of the Egyptians died, but not one of the livestock of the people of Israel died. And Pharaoh sent, and behold, not one of the livestock of Israel was dead. But the heart of Pharaoh was hardened, and he did not let the people go.
I mean, you talk about just flat-out pride and hubris of just the audacity for Pharaoh to say, I'm not giving in. Like, at this point, he knows, I can do nothing. My gods can do nothing. My magicians tapped out like two plagues ago. They can do nothing, but I am not giving in, right? He is dug in and hard-hearted, right? And that's obviously the MO for this guy. But you're seeing this get worse. And he's going to get warned here in a little bit from his advisors of like, Egypt's destroyed. Like, dude, there is an ounce of hope left for our land if you will just relent and let the people go. But we're done. Okay, so now you've got dead livestock, which means what?
More stinky.
More stinky? What else?
No food,
right? You've got agriculture that they eat, so they've got some. That's about to go away. And now all your food source just died, okay? So Israel's doing just fine, but you're not eating Israel's food. So they're done, okay? Now we're going to get disease. Verse 8, okay? God says to Moses, take soot from a kiln. You're going to throw it up in the air, and it's going to turn into now boils on the people. Okay, so now we're going to see the people directly affected by this. Okay, verse 9, we see the boils will break out like sores on a man and beast throughout the land of Egypt. Okay, so we're basically now going to create like big, pussy, nasty tumors all over people. Okay, nasty. Okay, verse 10, they took soot from a kiln, sorry, and stood before Pharaoh. Moses threw it towards the sky, and it became boils, breaking out with sores on the on man's and beast. 11, the magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, and the boils were on the magicians as well as on all the Egyptians. So, just again, kind of a backhanded slap to the magicians, like, you're so covered with boils, you can't even get out of bed to come, you know, mouth off to Moses at this point. So it's getting ramped up. So now it's directly affecting the people. We've got livestock dead. We got people with, you know, I don't know, chicken pox or whatever it is. It's nasty and not fun. They got boils all over them. So this is becoming now personally quite uncomfortable for the people. Okay, so it's getting ramped up. Now, next plague is hail. Okay, you guys know about hail in our society. What happens when you're trying to grow crops and you get hail? It destroys your crops, okay? So that's what's coming. So now we're going to get hail, all right? Verse 14, my plagues are coming. You'll know that there's no God on the earth like me, says God. 16, read that.
But for this purpose, I have raised you up to show you my power, so that my name may be proclaimed in all the earth.
Okay, so you continue to see this idea that God is exalting himself. Okay, 19, pick up there.
Now therefore, send, get your livestock and all that you have in the field into safe shelter. For every man and beast that is in the field and is not brought home will die when the hail falls on them.
All right, now, I come from Texas. We get hail. You guys haven't seen hail. Okay, you've seen like little pea-sized droplets. There have been recordings in Texas of like softball-sized hail, baseball-sized hail. When you get hit with that kind of hail in the head, you die, okay? It's odd. It may be once every 10 years that some random county out in the, you know, the boondocks or whatever of Texas gets hail that big. But it's normal for probably once every 3 years, quarter-sized hail comes. It's big. You take a car lot, destroyed. Destroyed. Windows broken, dents all over hoods, and you'll see car dealerships have hail sales. Like, you know, that $20,000 vehicle is now $12,000 because it's irreparable. And it's just, it looks like it went through like a war. Okay, so this is a big deal. When you get hit from a chunk of ice moving at maximum velocity, this is not small hail. Okay, if it's killing beast and man and everyone that's out in the field, this is a big deal. Okay, so God is now bringing fastballs. This is the real deal. Okay, so get them out of the field or they're all going to die. Okay, surprise, surprise, verse 21. Pharaoh pays no regard for the word of the Lord, left his servants and his livestock out in the field. Like, dude, what did you think was going to happen? Like, God's 6 for 6 at this point. Now he's going to bring hail. You were warned. You were given an opportunity to even to not have to experience the full consequences, and you still will not soften your heart. Okay? So, verse 22, God says, Moses, stretch out your hand, bring the hail, and on every man of the beast, on every plant of the field throughout the land of Egypt, hail's coming. Now, when hail comes and hits all of your crops, now what do you have? You've got a famine, okay, because all your food source is gone with your animals. Now all your plant sources are gone or almost gone. Our next plague is going to take care of the rest of it. So now you don't have food to eat, and you've got an arrogant Pharaoh who will not even remove his servants, his people, from the fields and his livestock. So what's going to happen to them all? They're going to die. His people are going to die because he won't bring them inside. So, interesting guy, okay? He is a hard dude, okay? 24, there was hail and fire flashing continually in the midst of the hail, very severe, such as had not been seen in the land of Egypt since it became a nation. Meaning, this is different. Never before have they seen something like this. Okay, 25, the hail struck all that was in the field throughout the land of Egypt, both man and beast. The hail struck every plant of the field and shattered every tree on the field. I mean, you talk about taking down trees, that's a big deal, right? Verse 26, only on the land of Goshen, where the sons of Israel were, there was no hail. I mean, that's a pretty isolated storm, right? So, fascinating. 27, watch now Pharaoh's response.
Then Pharaoh sent and called Moses and Aaron and said to them, this time I have sinned. The Lord is in the right, and I and my people are in the wrong.
All right, so, sounds good so far. Keep going.
With the Lord, for there has been enough of God's thunder in hell. I will let you go, and you shall stay no longer. Moses said to him, as soon as I have gone out of the city, I will stretch out my hands to the Lord. The thunder will cease, and there will be no more hell, so that you may know that the earth is in the Lord, is the Lord's. But as for you and your servants, I know that you do not yet fear the Lord God.
That's an interesting comment. Like, Moses realizes you're still not there. Like, you're hardened, and you just don't want the you don't want the sin to go away. You just want the consequences to go away. Okay, 31. They make mention of this. The flax and the barley were ruined because it was the time of the harvest. But I'm sorry, the barley was in the ear, but the flax was in its bud. So the flax was ruined, but the wheat in verse 32 was not ruined because it hadn't ripened yet. Okay, so they still have some crops to put their hope in. So two-thirds of what they're growing is gone. Okay, 33, Moses went out from the city of Pharaoh, spread his hands, it ceases. Okay, 34, exactly what you thought would happen happens. When Pharaoh saw that the rain and the hail and the thunder had ceased, he sinned again and hardened his heart, and he and his servants, Pharaoh's heart was hardened. He did not let the sons of Israel go, just as the Lord had spoken through the word of Moses. So he hardens his heart now yet again. Chapter 10 now, we're going to get locust. So everything that the hail did not take care of, now we're going to get locust. Okay, if you guys have ever seen locusts come through a town, these things take down airplanes. They are small in number in terms of at least their size, but when you put their numbers together, it's ridiculous. And they eat everything. So this is heaven for a locust, right? You've got leftover hailstorm stuff to get, and all the stuff that's continuing to grow is going to get demolished now. Okay, so the beasts are gone for the most part. Your food source is two-thirds gone. Now we're going to take care of the rest of it. Okay, so locusts are now going to come into the land and eat everything. Okay, verse 5. It's mentioned here, they shall eat every tree which sprouts for you out of the field. So anything that's going to grow at the end of this, it's going to be gone. Okay. Pharaoh's servants make now a comment to Pharaoh in verse 7. Read that.
Then Pharaoh's servants said to him, how long shall this man be a snare to us? Let the men go, and that they may serve the Lord their God. Do you not yet understand that Egypt is ruined?
That's a pretty significant statement. Like, they're like, look, we don't want to relent either, but our country's destroyed. Let them have what they want. Their God is bigger. Our nation's gone. Okay, so that's a bad day. Verse 8, Moses and Aaron were brought back to Pharaoh, and he said to them, go serve the Lord your God. Who are the ones that are going? Moses said, we shall go, verse 9, with our young and our old, with our sons and our daughters, with our flocks and our herds, and we will go, for we must hold a feast to the Lord. Now, there's some humor in that. Why is that funny? Yeah, they're having a famine, and Israel's saying, we got to go and have a feast. We're having a buffet. So, backhanded slap, okay? So Pharaoh says, great, I'm going to let you go. Who do you want to take? Moses says, everybody, young and old, beasts, we're all going, okay? Thus it may be, verse 10, if I let you go and your little ones go, take heed, for your evil is on your mind. Not so. Verse 11, here is now the third compromise offered from Pharaoh to Moses. Read that.
Verse 11. No, go the men among you and serve the Lord, for that is what you are asking. And they were driven out from Pharaoh's presence.
So what is the offer now from Pharaoh? Who can go?
The men.
Why the men? Why not the women and children? Hey, take your 3 days journey. Go as far as you want to. Worship the Lord. Have a buffet. I could care. Women and children have to stay here. Then they have to come back. He knows it. And Moses says, no, that's not going to work. Okay, obviously. So they bring now the hail, or rather the locusts. They come into the land. 12, stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts that they may come upon the land of Egypt and eat every plant of the land, even all that the hail is left. So anything remaining is gone. Verse 15, they cover the surface of the whole land so that the land was darkened. That's a lot of locusts when it's daytime and it looks like night. So the land was darkened and they ate every plant. 15, nothing green was left on tree or plant in the field throughout the land of Egypt. That is a bad day. So there's nothing green left. All your food at this point is gone. Okay. Pharaoh now, verse 16, hurriedly calls for Moses. I have sinned against the Lord, right? Makes another heartless plea for his consequences to be removed. Please, verse 17, forgive my sin this once. Make supplication to the Lord your God, and he would only remove this death from me. Okay, so he cries out to Moses. God shifted the wind in verse 19, removes now the locust back into the Red Sea so that not one locust is left in the land of Egypt, but the consequences are already done. But, surprise, surprise, verse 20, the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. He did not let the sons of Israel go. Okay, so 8 plagues. It's bad at this point. Everybody realizes it's bad. Now it's going to get really bad. Okay, 21. Second to last plague. Now we're going to see darkness. Okay, so pick up in verse 24. Let's pick up in verse 22.
So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was pitch darkness in all the land of Egypt 3 days. They did not see one another, nor did anyone rise from his place for 3 days. But all the people of Israel had light where they lived.
That's got to be creepy, right? So like God just shut the sun off, and so much so that they didn't even leave the house because it's that dark, okay, for 3 days. That's powerful. And yet the sun shines in Israel, in Goshen, right next to it. It's like, man, God, how did you do that? So it is pitch black, okay? Verse 24, Pharaoh's response. Read that.
And Pharaoh called Moses and said, go serve the Lord. Your little ones also may go with you. Only let your flocks and your herds remain behind.
Okay, so new compromise. Last of the four, what does he say? Who can go? Everybody, except for all your livestock, your food source, because if that's going to be here, then you're going to come back. Okay, so it's fascinating to me that he won't give in, right? He's totally dug in, right? 25, keep going. We're taking everything. So no, this ain't going to work. Okay? Verse 27, Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. He was not willing to let them go. Pharaoh says in verse 28, get away from me. Beware. Do not see my face again. For in the day that you see my face, you shall die. Moses said, you are right. I shall never see your face again. So Pharaoh says, get out of here. You're going to die the next time I see you. And you think you're going to do that to me? Moses says, no. I'm never going to see you again. Because now your heart is hardened and the worst of the worst is now upon you. Okay. Now, verse 11, we're going to begin, or chapter 11, we're going to begin to get death. Okay. So this is now the beginning of what will be the Passover. Okay. What we know about, and we'll talk through that in detail next week. But let's begin in chapter 11 and see now this final plague and what's going to happen here. Okay. 11 verse 1, read that.
The Lord said to Moses, yet one plague more I will bring upon Pharaoh and upon Egypt. Afterward, he will let you go from here. When he lets you go, he will drive you away completely. Speak now in the hearing of the people that they ask every man of his neighbor and every woman of her neighbor for silver and gold jewelry.
Okay, so that's what they're going to leave with. Okay, here's the last plague, verse 4. Read that.
So Moses said, thus says the Lord, about midnight I will go out in the midst of Egypt, and every firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the slave girl who is behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of the cattle.
So any firstborn, beast, man, Israel, Egypt, there's no distinction. Every firstborn will die. Okay, keep going.
There shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as there has never been before, never been, nor ever will again. But not a dog shall growl against any of his people of Israel, either man or beast, that you may know that the Lord makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel.
And there's going to be a way that Israel has to demonstrate that, again, by faith, which is chapter 12. So you don't get a get-out-of-jail-free card. You've got to demonstrate your obedience and your faith in what God's going to do by displaying publicly in action that he's going to call them to do. Okay? Keep going.
And all these your servants shall come down to me and bow down to me, saying, get out, you and all your people who follow you, and after that I will go out. And he went out from Pharaoh in hot anger.
Okay, so that's like he's saying, this is it. This is the last thing, Pharaoh. Firstborn of everything is going to die. And as soon as this happens, you're going to relent and you're going to let our people go. So he calls the shot, just like he's done this whole time. He said, this is the last thing. And this is what it's going to, this will ultimately break you. Okay. Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh, verse 9, will not listen to you, so that my wonders will be multiplied in the land of Egypt. Moses and Aaron performed all these wonders before Pharaoh, yet the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the sons of Israel go out of the land. Okay, so that is the prediction of what's to come. So chapter 12, we will see the Passover instituted, and we'll look at that next week. Okay, I would encourage you guys, if you haven't seen The Prince of Egypt, go watch this scene. It is creepy, haunting, just to think through. What would it be like? You know, I don't know how big Egypt is at this time, but we got millions of Jews. I assume that we've got a similar number of Egyptians. What would it look like to have that many deaths in a night? Every firstborn child in every household dies. And to watch the angel of the Lord come through the camp. Okay, they do a great job of depicting just the horror of what that would be to have literally millions of deaths in an evening. So, all right. You guys have a great weekend. We will see you on Thursday. Remember, we're off next Friday, so
I know you have lots of competing plans at 6 in the morning. Feel free to make those, okay? Enjoy.